As a reminder, if you're hearing my voice right now, you are listening via the free iTunes feed or possibly Stitcher. I don't know if we're on there anymore. But the point is, you're hearing something old. This is 2 weeks old. If you want the new episodes, you got to go to the Patreon, subbeacon.com, sign up. It's a little as a dollar a month. Or you can give us $100 a month. $100 a month is good, too, you know, but a dollar a month is good to start. It'll get you access to all the archives there, all the new stuff, all the old stuff. We got an episode coming Friday on The Mitchells versus The Machines, fun new animated movie on Netflix. Getting a lot of good buzz, It's from the folks who made Into the Spider-Verse. And it's clever, it's cute, it's fun. I'm sure JBL will hate it. But maybe not. I don't know. You never know. You never know how these things are going to go. So go to subbeacon.com, sign up for the Patreon. You will get new episodes. You will get old episodes, and you will not have to listen to things 2 weeks after they come out. Don't you want to be first on your block to hear the new Subbeacon? Sure you do. So now on with this episode, which is about Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat. Great movie. Maybe. Maybe it was terrible. You'll have to listen to find out.
Throughout history, different cultures all over the world reference a great tournament of champions. That dragon marking? I think it's an invitation to fight for something known.
Welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan V. Lass and Sonny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends. And don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. JVL, what's going on?
JVL, somebody claimed to have solved the headache shirt mystery. They said it was just like wife beaters. Just tank tops.
Why would they call that a headache shirt?
I mean, who could say? Who was this who claimed to have solved the mystery?
I don't know. Someone on Twitter.
Somebody on Twitter with sensory issues. Who could say? So somebody sent me a watch.
Ooh, what? What kind of watch?
In the mail, it is what we would call in the trade an homage. Okay. A fashion knockoff.
An Omega?
A fashion knockoff of an Omega, the new modern Seamaster. And I laughed very hard at it. And it's great. It is a fun piece to have. And I am totally grateful to whoever sent it to me.
But the problem is there's no note. Are you sure it's a knockoff, JVL?
Yeah, how do you know it's a knockoff?
Because it is, in order to escape copyright infringement, it is branded as... Hold on, let me pull out the watch brand. Pagani Design. And if you go to Pagani Design's website, it is like the Echelon. It's the Lep. This is the Lepin version of
Pagani. Yeah. It says Fugazi.
Is the Lepin version of all sorts of watches. So you go and they have, like, you know, they have homages of all the Rolexes, homages of all the Tag Heuers.
Are they able to
homages
get a
of Tudor?
Alec, what's like? Do they avoid getting in legal trouble because it's an homage?
Or because everything's done in China where there is no law?
Question.
One of those two. One of those
questions.
Anyways, all of which say I'm very grateful for whoever did this, but I have not contacted you to express my gratitude because the package included no
mystery.
Note. And I don't
love
know how
mystery
to...
gift.
Question.
So thank you. Yes.
Did how are those watches any different from the vastly more expensive ones? Do they tell the time less efficiently? Actual difference between...
For starters, yes. It will tell the time less efficiently.
Does the bezel not go to 11?
The bezel switches.
The bezel?
Unclear how long this one will function. It is unclear what would happen if water were to splash upon it. But it's adorable, and it makes me smile, and I'm really grateful.
If you're walking and you're waving it around like you have a short sleeve shirt or whatnot, would you not be able to tell? You'd be like, oh, that guy's got an Omega. I guess
would the layman not be able to tell him? Not obviously Jonathan V. Last would be able to tell.
Here is the thing. Yeah, Omega is, I mean, people who don't know anything about watches don't know Omega, right? If you don't know anything about watches, then all you know is Rolex.
Right.
And if one of the Rolexes of these rolled past you and you didn't know anything and you just sort of glanced it, you would think, sure, that's a Rolex. That looks like a Datejust, right? That has a fluted bezel. I recognize what a fluted bezel looks like. The fluted bezel means Rolex. I guess that's a Rolex. To even know what an Omega Seamaster is, you have to be kind of into watches, right? I mean, no casual person would know that. It's like, it's even though it is a incredibly large brand within the watch world,
huge,
it's a very small brand within the world of people who don't pay attention to watches.
I know with Rolexes that you can tell if it's a knockoff because of the second hand. The second hand, you know, the one that does a second, is that what you call it? The second hand.
Tell me why you think the second hand is what tells Victorino.
Okay. Oh, because a fake. You could see my hand in the screen here. A fake goes boom, boom. It bumps second to second, and of course the Rolex is fluid.
So the Rolex is more fluid, like, but that? It is not fluid in the way that a Grand Seiko spring drive movement is fluid. When something does one tick per second, what that means is that it's quartz. And so one marker of a watch not being authentic would be that it says Rolex Datejust on it, but it in fact has a
quartz
battery-powered quartz movement.
In it. So the other ones are like digital then. It's like computers?
Okay. Very good. The other is you take your punch card. There's a punch card with a series of holes in it, and you shove those in, but you have to push a punch. And
that's very small punch card.
Every hour, you need a new punch card for the
Megavac experience.
You know what I like looking at? For me, you know, like, people have their favorite magazines to read, you know, especially when they're in their office in the morning doing their ablutions, shall we say. Like in Lethal Weapon 2, Danny Glover is caught, you know, when he's sitting on the toilet with the bomb.
Yeah, what is he reading?
Oh, he's reading like a boating magazine about boats, right?
That's so funny because he's so into boats.
Right, he's so into boats. For me, I love when we go travel to places, which has been now, it feels like forever.
Barely legal busty.
Besides
no,
that.
No, sorry.
Besides that. I'm in the bathroom, but not for that. It's for places that I've been to. So like one of them is like Grand Cayman. And it's like, you know, they always have like a magazine for Grand Cayman where I fantasize writing for that magazine where all you do is visit restaurants and write about it. It would be really exciting. And all the ads are like duty-free ads and a huge full page ad on the back of the Grand Cayman one, which is upstairs, is Omega, and it's got to be the Seamaster, but they have the Speedmaster as well, and I just love looking at it.
I was thinking of you last night, Victorino. I was reading I've subscribed to a new website that I really like. It's called The Generalist. It's very expensive, but it's a sort of tech finance newsletter.
Oh, good.
And it just has really interesting case studies in it. And there was a long, probably 4,000-word case study on LVHM.
Oh, yeah. Louis Vuitton Moet Hennessy.
Yes. Or LVMH, right?
LVMH. I guess yeah.
And the history of this company, which began essentially with a kid whose father owned an iron mine.
Oh, that's great.
It was like iron ore or something. He convinced his dad to get out of the iron business and instead focus on real estate. He made enough money in real estate that then when Dior, I think, Christian Dior was in hard times in the 80s and the French government wanted to broker a sale to somebody. I mean, unimportant. What is important is that they have become kind of like a tech company in that they have just specialized on acquisitions. And so they've gone out and they own Tiffany. They own Guinness.
Yes.
They own Fendi not Cartier. Mm-hmm. So they've got like 60 brands.
Right.
And together.
It's amazing.
But their market cap and revenue is close to Walmart.
Yeah. Yeah, but only in luxury.
Can you believe? But
they only
luxury.
Deal in luxury brands.
Isn't that fascinating? Yeah. And I thought of you, and I thought,
get me in that world.
This is what Vic was made to do. I don't know what you would do there.
I don't know either.
But right, I can write their catalogs. I can write their brand. Oh,
you would be the Jay Peterman
ambassador. Do you remember
the Jay Peterman of?
Do you remember the Ambassadrice, Sonny? Is that familiar? Is that that might be Continetti, where he and I think we did a Courvoisier tasting.
I did not. Yes. I was not part of that.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. It was at Ozio's Cigar Lounge. Doubly interesting. Ooh. Back in
Is this? I have a question. Did you guys wind up at the Mayflower drinking vodka martinis?
Quite possibly.
That night?
We started drinking martinis.
I remember getting a phone call from our friend Matt that night. As I'm walking home from the, I couldn't go because I remember, I couldn't
days.
Go because I had a screening in Silver Spring.
Okay, uh-huh.
And I get a call on my cell phone from our mutual friend, and it was the most incoherent thing I've ever heard. I could not make out heads or tails of what was being said.
That was probably it, but I remember early on, you know, you sit through a whole, you know, tasting. And the representative was not just the ambassador, but she was called the ambassadrice. Ambassadrice.
The ambassadrix.
And all I knew is that's what I want to do in life. So
is anyway. Be the ambassadrix?
Did that happen?
that with me and right Matt? There? No. Quite possibly. It got very blurry. Thank you, JVL.
That's all. Anyway, that's good stuff. Victorino, I was thinking that this LVMH. Is what you need to do.
Yeah, I read about this.
This is
all
your
the
future.
Time,
this is a company where surely they have a place for a man of your talents and tastes.
Yes.
And you might have to move to France.
Yeah.
Which is, I believe, their headquarters is in Paris.
Could you manage that? It's good living. I mean,
you wouldn't want to live in
Saint Germain.
Going what are you gonna, to you're just going to sit around and drink wine and
Colbert.
Eat cheese all
that
day.
That would be terrible. I wouldn't survive more than a month, I think. I think something would happen with my
body.
Can
you still get your Wolverine blood there?
Yeah, that's
your Wolverine blood transfusions.
That's a good question, and I think you can because the drug is developed by Regeneron and Sanofi, and Sanofi is French.
I have a question.
Yes.
Could you do Peloton in France? Do they have French Peloton? And if so... What is the French version of Emma Lovewell and Jess King?
Right, must be amazing. Right. Yeah, much like French commercials for like soap.
Right. I mean,
like,
can you even imagine like what the
products.
French Jess King is?
It's just, you know.
It's basically 20-year-old Emmanuel Baird.
That's your go-to.
And she's smoking while she's riding on the bike,
That's right. Yeah, and she belittles you.
Yeah. Go faster, you... Pig.
Sonny, when we started recording, you had bangs. You're letting your hair grow out.
Well, no, I just haven't combed it because I took a shower earlier because I went to the gym before picking up the kids. So
look at you.
I know. I've been living the healthy life. Now that I'm immortal, now that I have the Highlander's blood in me in the form of Moderna, shots one and two. I have been going back to the gym. Have I told you guys about going back to the gym? Did I bring this up on a previous episode?
Not a lot of detail.
I can't remember.
What is it like inside?
Well, I mean, Chicago law say that this new gym you've joined, you have to cancel it in person by flying to Dulles.
Well, it's LA Fitness. It's LA Fitness, so probably I have to go to Los Angeles. Yeah. I have to kill Eric Garcetti.
Wow.
And parade around the city with his head on a pike and say, cancel my membership, cancel my membership. That's the only way to get out of it. No, I went back to the gym and I waited until I was 2 weeks out of my second shot because I knew exactly what a gym in Dallas, Texas would be like.
Oh, it'd be sweat-a-thon.
Let me tell you, no masks. Nobody's wearing a mask in here. And that's fine. That's why I waited to go because I didn't want to work out with a mask either. And I'm sure... All of these people have been fully vaccinated and are,
it's
you know,
Texas. It's already
but
in
I,
the blood.
So I went back to the gym after being fully vaccinated and it was very amusing because, again, no masks, whatever. That's fine. I'm ambivalent about
but
that
how
at this point
is
because
the gym?
Because
how
I'm immortal.
How crowded?
Well, it's about as It's about as crowded as it was before. The gym I go to was never very crowded. It was never super crowded. I would say it's less crowded, frankly, than it was before.
Even pre-COVID.
Yeah.
Pre-COVID.
It's less crowded than it was pre.
I was not a fan of.
Oh no.
Building
no.
Crowded gym in our building was the worst.
No.
People hogging machines. People leaving the dump. You know how the people leave like, oh, I'm using this one for later. You know?
No, really? I don't.
That's my bench over there. I'm just gonna hang my stuff on it.
I don't lift weights. Like a savage, like a Neanderthal. I do cardio.
I
do light cardio.
That's all
for 40 minutes.
Okay.
But no mask, which fine. That's what I was expecting. That's why I waited. It was very amusing though. So I'm sitting. So there are six bikes. There are six exercise bikes in a row, and on every other bike, there's a piece of paper that says this. This device is closed for distancing. You please use the one next to it, right? And at the time I was going, all three of the open machines were being used. All three of the open machines were being used. So I'm just sitting there biking along, bike. Not a fancy Peloton bike. I bike like a man of the earth on a Life Fitness.
Oh yeah,
cycle
like a savage,
like a
farmer.
I am a man of the people. At my LA Fitness, I'm just sitting there biking along, and of course, this old man, 70, walks up, looks at the bikes all full, gets on the one that's right next to me, just flips that piece of paper up, starts pedaling away. He's like, I don't care.
Yeah,
I'm gonna
made
if I die,
yeah,
I'm gonna
die.
Yeah, the
old man has made a choice.
I was like, all right, whatever. This is why I waited. This is why I waited to be fully vaccinated. I don't want to have to deal with any of these people.
I like the space even pre-COVID. That would be like, you know what? Unless it's a woman, it's just too close.
Well, obviously.
Just say in this old man's defense, I assume these bikes are indoors.
Yes, they're all indoors.
Yeah, okay.
If
you are indoors with no ventilation doing heavy cardiovascular 6 feet away from somebody, it is for 40 minutes.
Makes no difference.
That is no difference than being 3 feet away in terms of...
Excellent point.
And so no, or being 90 guys, feet away.
Mm-hmm. And so long as you guys are vaccinated, everything's fine. Mm-hmm. I sure hope this gentleman was vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. Well, I assume he probably was because he's an older individual and like 80% of olds... In Texas, are vaccinated.
Yeah, I don't believe that's true in Texas. That's true nationally.
Yeah, but thank goodness for herd immunity. Thank goodness for herd immunity. Sonny, you have an update, I think, about highlights.
About highlights?
You're...
Oh, well, no, I was just texting with you guys that I got my cookie dough. Remember, I mentioned that there was a young girl who was going around for the sixth grade fundraiser at the elementary school that's one block from my house, who was selling cookie dough, got that cookie dough. She came door to door with her little red wagon full of cookie dough, going door to door. No word yet on whether or not the children's hospital has received those highlights.
And a $600 charge in your bank to Toys R Us, or to American Girl. I guess Toys R Us is dead.
Are you going to say American Girl doll?
$600.
The Disney store.
The American Girl. Company. That's about it. Victorino, what's up, buddy?
Well, I was going to say...
You look like you had something to say.
I had a bunch of different things. One of them is you definitely can tell that the pandemic is ending because of my lunch and dinner appointments, various friends, family-related, birthday dinner coming up for Kate's cousin. Everybody wants to go out now. Which is great. But for me, the problem is now it's the reverse. You know, people talk about COVID-19, you get the 19, you know, like you gain 19. I'm the reverse. I'm getting the post-COVID-19. I'm going to gain weight now that this is over. Like I lost weight because I couldn't go out. So, you know, I'm eating at home sensibly-ish and then running 3 times a week. And now that it's begun again... I'm just barely staying even. In fact, I'm gaining some weight, and I don't think in a good way. I'm running like 6+ miles 3 times a week, about an hour, because that's all that's all the time I have. It amazes me, people who run long distances. That's a real commitment in time. It's like
an hour
for me. That's it. 60 minutes plus the time before, after. It's like 2 hours altogether. You get showered and, you know, do the whole thing.
Are your kids back in school?
2 days and 2 days. So like my son, my daughter is in Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and my son is Thursdays, Fridays.
That's the worst. They couldn't give you them both on the same day.
No, not even on the same day, so we're never alone. We are never alone.
Just you know what? Texas full of old men breathing COVID on you at the gym, but we got our kids in school. Tell you that.
Yeah, that's great. That
truth
great.
Is Kate called the school system.
She made sure it staggered, so I don't want to be alone. So anyway, then last Friday was a particularly long lunch that went from 12:30
with a lot of business?
Business lunch from 12:30 to 6:30.
Was that the goodbye to Gutowski?
No, I can't remember anymore.
What sort of business did you do?
It was networking.
Did you found a new magazine?
It was networking, really.
Did you
really.
Edit
it was, you
a
know,
piece? Did you write a 4,000 word piece while you were at lunch for 6 hours?
How can I do that when I'm at lunch? I believe it was team building. It was just team building.
Team building.
I'm actually trying to think. Oh, no. Our colleague, I sent you a picture, Sonny. Stephanie Merrick was in town.
Oh,
she was visiting
because
she is still on maternity leave, but she came up to the city, and so we went out to lunch. And then that just sort of devolved.
Where did you guys go? Where was that picture? I couldn't actually tell.
Oh, that's an interesting
one.
So we started off at the Palm, and then we walked down to the corner of 19 and M. Outside, which used to be
used
to be at a Malaysian place. It switches over all the time. At the moment, right now, as of April 2021, it is Boqueria.
Okay,
but it's like the served alcohol. Great, we'll sit outside, and then after that, we ended up at the quarter deck. So the weight gain issue is an issue for me. And we'll see what happens. I'm trying.
We just got to keep running, man.
I don't know. I mean, I may have to cut back on the diet, but I find that to be very difficult.
Just do what I've been doing. I've basically been on the diet that the old woman has in Requiem for a Dream. I'm basically just eating. I'm eating a hard boiled egg and a cup of coffee every morning. Sometimes I throw a banana in there.
I get into these modes where I just can't stop eating, which is crazy. Okay, I do have to ask you this, Sonny. What is the deal with this whole Paddington 2 business that came up on Twitter?
Paddington 2 is now the highest rated movie of all time on Rotten Tomatoes. Oh. It has 100% fresh ratings, 245 of 245 fresh, something like that.
Why is that?
I don't know. I haven't seen it. It looks like a trash movie. I want to watch it and give it a negative rating.
It's a very good movie.
I feel even more strongly.
The first Paddington is garbage. There was nothing about Paddington 2 which recommended anything about it. And when I saw it for the first time a few years ago, I kind of couldn't believe it, and I had to watch it again because I thought,
rare?
Was this movie good? And then I was talking with J-Pod, and I said, am I nuts about this? And John was like, it's amazing!
The rare sequel that is better than the original.
The rare sequel that is better than Godfather Part 2.
I'm not saying it's better or worse than Godfather Part 2.
Bears.
But I am saying that this isn't like Sonic the Hedgehog. That's what I'm saying. The first Paddington might as well be the Jim Carrey Sonic the Hedgehog.
Who is the leading man? Is it Colin Firth?
No, the leading man is Hugh Grant.
Oh, Ewan McGregor. Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant, who is a villain.
They're all
who
the
is
same.
An aging stage quit. It's fabulous.
All right. I made one terrible mistake, though, because I happened to glance on Twitter where you talked about somebody giving you a GIF or something, or they replaced Brad Pitt's head.
Well, I joked that if I was going to write the negative Paddington 2 review, I would have to use as the image for it the Bolito scene from The Counselor. But with Paddington's head on Brad Pitt's face.
JBL, have you seen this movie?
I read the screenplay. I didn't want to see the movie. I read the screenplay.
The movie, The movie we should do. We should do the movie.
Oh,
because I love that movie.
I never saw this movie, Sonny, and then I see you make a reference to it. So
did you Google it?
I went to YouTube, and I was even more curious when I got a warning, like, oh, you know, about the content. And I said, I got to find out. And it starts, I have no idea because I've never seen this movie. And I'm like, oh, it's Brad Pitt. And then I'm like, I get a nervous feeling something's going to happen to him. And I kind of know sort of a Bolito. I was thinking more like a Garrote, like in Marathon Man, Piano Wire, something
similar
to that effect.
Similar idea. And then, just a mechanized Garrote.
Or something like, you know, where it's a really quick... You know, something like that noise, as you will. And then that thing happens where they put this neck vise on him and you hear this mechanical whirring sound. And Sonny, I have to tell you, it was the most horrifying thing I've seen in a long time. And I've seen a lot.
You've seen some stuff.
And Green Inferno parts of. And this thing haunted me. Like, so I went for a run. I couldn't get out of my mind. And all I could think of is, like, what would I do if I was in that situation? JVL, do you want to die?
You
I would just let it happen. Okay, well, I'm just going to lie down now.
You would just die. I mean, that's all that would
JVL,
happen.
JVL, do you know what happens?
Yeah, I've read the
screenplay. You talk about this thing.
And the Bolito is, you know, the central metaphor of the movie. The movie is the Bolito, right? Yeah. The whole thing that the counselor finds himself in, the situation is itself a Bolito. The gears grind insanely fine. There's nothing he can do to stop it. The screenplay is great.
It was.
Well, the screenplay is very Cormac McCarthy.
Oh.
So the screenplay was written by Cormac McCarthy. It was directed by Ridley Scott.
It is a
great movie. It is also the most terrifyingly nihilistic thing I've ever seen.
The Cameron
which
Diaz.
Is like, the you know, those two are not unrelated.
More nihilistic than Sicario?
Oh, yeah. Million times more. Oh, I mean, like, Sicario at least has, like, at the very least, Sicario has within it a kernel of vengeance that kind of is like, all right, well, this is like, you can see how vengeance would cause a person to do this. And in The Counselor, it is just somebody makes a choice, and that choice leads to his wife being raped and beheaded and thrown in a garbage dump, and Brad Pitt getting bolitoed on the streets of, you know, Los Angeles or wherever that happens.
Sicario 2, not Paddington 2. I'm just going to say that.
Yes. Correct.
Sicario 2, directed by the guy who they just released this movie Without Remorse, or it's coming to Amazon.
Yes.
Which is the new Michael B. Jordan, Tom Clancy movie.
Good.
Bad.
Not good. Okay. Anyway, thank you for that lovely beheading treat this morning that I happened to see. And
the best part is the fingers. The fingers that get cut off.
Right off as well. Anyway.
Anyway. So a friend actually made me. I'm sorry. I'm interrupting your transition.
Well, you know
here.
Where we're going with it. So just go
I'm
ahead.
Interrupting we'll your transition here. But the but a friend actually made me the GIF of Paddington's face on Brad Pitt getting the Bolito, and I can't share it because it's too horrifying.
It's too horrifying to see. That's amazing. Okay. Well, speaking of lots of gore and beheadings, this week we're talking about Mortal Kombat. I have to say, yesterday I was on the phone with my father, and I said, well, I got to go. I said, I got to watch this movie with my son, Mortal Kombat. And he said, oh, he says, I saw that years ago. And I said, no, I said, this is a remake. This is a reboot. And on HBO. And he immediately said, oh, I got to watch that then. I got to go. I said, okay, good. So I haven't spoken to him since.
What? But, we don't get a Dr. Mattis
No, I have
review?
To ask him what I have to ask him what he thinks about it. Because, you know, even when we were watching it, my son goes, oh, this is definitely a movie for my dad.
Yes. Yeah, so. I'm sorry. Let me just go out on a limb and guess that Dr. Mattis gives it 4 stars.
4 stars. Yeah, I bet he does. And I told him about boss level too. And he's like, base level? I said, no, boss level. Boss. Oh, I see. I've seen that. I said, okay, see that too. It's good. Sonny, how about a big boy review?
So Mortal Kombat is not a good movie. And I say this as somebody who actually liked the original Mortal Kombat for what it was, which is, it's a movie about a fighting tournament. Fine. That's fine. And it had all sorts of trappings from the Mortal Kombat games. But what the problem with Mortal Kombat, the new one, Mortal Kombat 2021, is that it seems almost embarrassed to be about an actual fighting tournament. And I say this because there is no Mortal Kombat tournament in the movie Mortal Kombat, which is a real problem. It's a real problem. Now, that said, there are things that I like about it. And the things I like about it are almost entirely taken up in the first 10 minutes of the movie, in which we encounter a 17th century or something ninja, the best ninja who's ever lived. He's wearing kind of a yellow striped gi or whatever, I don't, whatever that, you know, outfit is called. And he gets attacked by a cryo assassin who is there to take him out and wipe
Did
out
you
his
just make
wipe
up
out
that
his
term?
No, I think that's in the it's in the you know, ad copy or whatever. And if you can't tell exactly where this is going, where this like little 10-minute segment is going, there's no reason for you to be watching the rest of this movie. But like I loved that kind of little story about the, you know, the family vengeance and the blood feud and all that. I love that. And then everything else in this is just kind of dumb, and the fight scenes are not that good. And nothing in it, nothing that happens in it actually makes any sense. Let me just, this is what I mean. So the whole point of the movie is, in theory, Mortal Kombat takes place. And because Outworld is about to win their 10th in a row, they're going to be able to invade the realm of Earth, right? Except Outworld spends the entire movie already invading the realm of Earth. They just keep sending assassins over to kill people. Shang Tsung's like, I'm going to send more people over to kill these guys. And Raiden's like, you better stop this. This is against the rules. You can't do this. And Shang Tsung is like, LOL, you mad, bro? What are you going to do to stop me? And that is, I like,
go to
I,
the
I,
old gods. That's I, what he'll do.
Well, no, but I mean, this is the thing. So it's like, he's like, oh, what are you going to do? You're going to call the old gods? They're too busy jerking off in the background over there. They don't care anymore. And it's like, okay, well, then what's the whole point of this Mortal Kombat tournament? Why even have it if you can just send people to the Earth realm to kill all the fighters before the fights are even supposed to take place? I am like, I can put up with a lot of nonsense. And in the first movie, the original one by Paul W.S. Anderson, I did put up with a lot of nonsense. That movie is not a good movie exactly, but at least it knows what it is. This movie doesn't actually seem to know what it is. It introduces this new character who is the audience stand-in. He is not one of the classic Mortal Kombat characters. He just is there to, you know, be, again, the audience surrogate. And he's annoying and terrible and awful at fighting. His only power is to get beaten all the time. That's like his main power. He just gets crap kicked out of him. But he happens to have the bloodline of the guy who becomes Scorpion. So we gotta have him around. Gotta have him around. I didn't care at all about the Jax and Sonya Blade storyline. The Liu Kang, Kung Lao stuff was okay, but not that interesting, not nearly interesting enough to keep me entertained. The only saving grace for the entire, like, last hour and 30 minutes of this movie is Kano, who is hilarious. Kano is, like, delightfully vulgar and stupid and ridiculous, and also, like, kind of funny, and does some of the great bits from the game and from the kind of, you know, legacy material. But like the movie as a whole, I was shocked, frankly, JVL, that you said that you love this movie, because it is dumb and full of plot holes. And like, again, like it doesn't follow the basic rules of the universe that it creates, which is the biggest sin a movie like this can have. If you're going to make a movie about Sub-Zero and Scorpion and their blood feud and take that through the centuries, I would gladly watch that. This is not that movie, and what it is just kind of disappointing. I'm done. Done with rant.
Wow.
Slash rant.
Wrong. JVL. Look, I mean, if you would like to mount the argument that this is not, in fact, the Paddington 2 of Mortal Kombat movies, fine. I will grant that. It's not the Paddington 2 of Mortal Kombat movies. There are things I will confess, I really like the first Mortal Kombat. I like Christopher Lambert. I like Mrs. Pete Sampras. I like the music.
Totally.
Mortal Kombat.
Totally entertaining movie that knows what it is, which is a B-movie set around a fighting tournament.
And your points about the lack of logic for what the Outworld is doing. for who the old gods are, for why the old gods don't intervene, for why Shang Tsung just keeps coming up. Sure, I will grant all of that. And in response, I will say that Kung Lao takes his metal hat and he throws it into the ground, and in the ground it begins spinning halfway up like a circular saw. And Kung Lao then takes one of the bad guys, who I don't even remember who they are, and runs them through the circular saw lengthwise. Doesn't cut them in half like a magician. Cuts them in half straight on down the center line of the body. And I'm sorry, that's amazing. Boom roasted. Greatest movie ever.
Again, I'm happy to admit that it has a couple of good kills, but it doesn't have nearly enough good kills to make up for all of the rest of it. It takes forever to get to the kills. Like, the fights are not very well shot. They're kind of boringly shot as far as, like, martial arts movies fights go. I can think of a dozen movies off the top of my head that are shot better than this. The actual action of it doesn't really kick in until, I don't know.
But they say all the catchphrases.
But they say
every single catchphrase is in it.
Yes, here's another. I have another big complaint here. This entire movie, the Scorpion guy, he's talking in Japanese to the point
you're waiting for him to say, "Get over here."
To the point where, like, in the early going, there are subtitles, and it's like subtitles in Japanese,
Chinese.
And then Sub-Zero's talking, and it's like in Chinese, and they can't understand each other, and they've got different subtitles going on. And then at the end, he just shouts, "Get over here!" all of a sudden, like he can just start. He just starts speaking English.
He learned English when
he was
in hell.
How did that happen?
He was in hell for 600 years, and he learned English while he's down there. He used Rosetta, the Rosetta program, and he picked it up very quickly.
They should have
done what they did in Cannonball Run 1 when Jackie Chan was doing this game show thing, and it's supposed to be Japanese, and the entire time he's speaking Japanese, and then the host and the other people are speaking Chinese. Doesn't matter. It's fine. No, he's speaking Chinese, rather. The other people are speaking Japanese. Didn't matter.
I was, by the end of, like, minute four, I was practically twitching and tweaking like somebody needing their heroin fix, waiting for him to say, "Get over here." I was just like, come on,
so that's the catchphrase.
Say
the words. That's his thing.
Okay, so if I was going to be serious, I would say, so it is an accident of fate that Sub-Zero and Scorpion became the two most popular characters in the game. If you go back and look at, and we'll talk about the video game at some point. I actually want to have a long discussion about the video game. But if you go back and look at it, those two characters are clearly padding being put on by the game developers at Midway because they were under an insane timeline to deliver this game. The history of Mortal Kombat, this is not auteur theory. This is a pure commerce play. So Midway comes to a couple of the developers in their stable in 1991 and says, "Hey, we need a side-scrolling fighting game, and we need it 10 months from now because Street Fighter 2 is coming out from Capcom, and we got to have something to compete with that in the arcades." And so these four guys are like, okay. Let's build a... So it isn't like, you know, they had this deep thought. And so they just start throwing this together. And, you know, they decide to try digitizing and pixelating the, you know, sort of photorealistic guys. And they're just running out of room. And so what do? They take two of the guys, they just make them the same, but change the color on them. When G.I. Joe would release the repaint of a figure.
Yes, right. It was
grunts. And yet those two are the two characters that players latched onto. And so deciding that they're just going to lean into that and make the entire Mortal Kombat universe part of the Sub-Zero Scorpion drama is a very nice piece of storytelling. There, right, that pop.
Here, can I give you an idea?
Sure.
That would have improved this whole thing.
Sure.
I agree that the Scorpion Sub-Zero drama is the only interesting thing. I agree that it's a nice way to deal with the fans. What if I were to suggest to you that Scorpion, after he goes to hell, engages in a series of tournaments? If you win 10 of them in a row, you get to leave hell.
Ooh.
And
that's a good idea.
Movie The whole movie is him engaging in the 10th and final tournament, and he takes, you know, Liu Kang or somebody under his wing, but keeps him kind of at a distance. And it turns out that they have to fight each other in the championship, and they do, and Scorpion kills him. And then he kills Shang Tsung, who is actually the devil. He takes the souls of the people. And then he gets to escape hell, and then he gets to fight Sub-Zero. What if we did that? Because that would be a million times better. It would make way more sense than anything that's happened in this movie.
I would see that movie as well. And the good news is we're going to get more of these movies. So
yeah, because they're going after, what's his name?
Victorino, did you notice that in the original Hollywood. Sub-Zero versus Scorpion thing, Sub-Zero is speaking Chinese and Scorpion is speaking Japanese?
Did I notice in the what? In the
opening seven minutes.
Well, they
one of them is Japanese, one of them is Chinese.
Right, they make a big deal out of the language.
Yeah, the subtitles.
Yeah. I don't know. It's fucking amazing. It's fucking amazing. And you know what? Your version of the movie, if Sub-Zero gets to say, get over here 10 times because he has to win 10 victories, then it would be even 10 times better. Because he'd say my favorite catchphrase over and over again. No,
do we think that people latched on to
have fun? If you can't have fun with this movie, and you liked the video game, right? This is the other key for somebody who has never played Mortal Kombat. Absolutely, of course. Mm-hmm. Why? You know, you might as well watch the test pattern,
right?
Right on TV.
I only played this game a couple times, so I watch it basically as a movie.
For those of us who remember spending, you know, many hours mashing our fingers
this game a ton growing up.
Into those
I respect the idea of Mortal Kombat, which is that it is a tournament between Earth and Outworld to determine the fate of the universe.
In a
and
tournament.
The fact that they they discard all of the rules. Raiden is impotent. He is unable to protect the people.
Yeah.
The old gods have turned their back on everything. Shang Tsung is just like, I'm gonna send guys over. Who cares? How are you gonna stop me? Can't stop me. Ridiculous. Don't care for it.
You know what's funny is the entire tournament story, the mythology of Mortal Kombat, was all layered on after the game was made.
Well, who cares? That's what it is.
I'm not saying it's bad or good. I'm saying it's one of these interesting stories. It's kind of like the Marvel method of writing stories, where Jack Kirby would draw a bunch of panels, and then Stan Lee would come in and like
tell the story
of what's happening in those panels. Right. It's this insane ass backwards way of doing things, but that is essentially how Mortal Kombat was made. It was we'll make this video game, and then somebody else will come up with an idea for the story.
Question,
right? Victorino,
yes.
I need to put a quarter in the machine and hear the man of the people.
Okay, well, before that, speaking of which. Was Mortal Kombat a 50-cent game or a dollar?
50-cent.
Yeah. Yeah, I always preferred the quarter games.
It might have been a quarter.
No, there's no way. It was it was very complex for its time. There's no way it was 25 cents. I was going to say a dollar. But it's, you know.
No, it definitely was not a dollar game.
It must have been 50 cents then. But, yeah, you know, because you had these actors or... The visuals were much different. The quadrant score that I have, okay, so the overall quadrant score is about a B+, A minus, B plus.
When did you become the East German judge?
Yeah, I know. Well,
because for the last couple months, you've been stingy as fuck.
I have, and I think it's because
no nudity in this.
Because I'm removing the NAs and so that that gets an F and it lowers the grade. So the plot is an A+. Obviously, very straightforward. We know what's going on. Duration is an A+. So did you think it went too long, Sonny?
Well, no. But how is the plot an A+? It's way more complicated than it needs to be.
No. Plot is very straightforward. They're going to fight each other. That's the plot.
That's not the plot, though.
In theory,
that's what the plot should be. The plot should be like, they're all going to get together and they're going to fight. But instead, it's like Shang Tsung is like, I'm going to turn Kano evil, and
the plot is somebody says flawless victory. That's the plot.
Okay, so that's why A+. Okay, duration A+. Violence action is A++. So that is
and yet this all comes out to B+
because if you add in sex nudity is F.
You have been giving.
I know. I'm changing. I'm getting tough. I'm becoming Harvey Mansfield of the quadrants, and thank you. It's a deep pull. And I thought about it. Is it unfair to give this movie an F for sex nudity? And the question and the answer is no, because I was thinking of other movies that were similar to this from the 1980s, namely The Octagon with Chuck Norris. And it's the same thing where he's got to go in and there is a terrorist camp run by ninjas and he's got to bust it up. And then there's a scene where he's in a motel with the fellow, the woman that he's going to go fight together with. And she takes off her top.
Look, there's all I'm saying is that you know what fighters do a lot? They take showers.
Yeah, no, exactly. They could have had that, you know, something like they don't. There's no more.
There's no imagination.
You know,
really,
and there's no more gratuitous. There's no more gratuitous nudity. It's gone. You know, everyone talks.
Yeah, I wonder
about,
why.
Everyone.
I wonder why it's gone.
Everyone talks about. Oh, yeah. Everyone used to say, "Oh, yeah, it gets worse and worse."
It's
you know,
weird.
The
you
music,
put Harvey Weinstein
the video
in jail,
games.
And suddenly women aren't getting naked on screen
this
anymore.
This is terrible. It really is terrible. And so everyone always talks about how things are getting worse. Yeah, it's getting worse for me. That's what's getting worse. Okay. Other than that, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fine. I thought it was a lot of action and violence. Not too disturbing. It was bloody, but it wasn't like. It's like it looked like computer blood. It looked like the same computer special effect for blood as the game, I guess, as opposed to, let's say, Brad Pitt in that Bolito scene, which was that
well,
is a lot
not
more
realistic.
Graphic.
This
yeah,
is,
it's
this
not
is,
realistic.
So
it's not
you
realistic.
Know, I would make this point. There is a level people don't, I think, appreciate that there is a level which the violence becomes cartoonish, mm-hmm. which makes it less disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
absolutely.
For me, one of the most disturbing acts of violence I've ever seen on the screen is in The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh, yeah.
When Matthew Damon hits Philip Seymour Hoffman in the side of the head with a board or with an oar, right? That's it. He just hits him in the side of the head once with an oar. That is way more disturbing than watching whoever run through the circular saw of mm-hmm.
Jack's
hat.
Mm-hmm. Jackson with his little... T-Rex arms, like,
that was so bad. That was terrible. Okay, I was not a, I wouldn't say it's after my time because we're close in age, JVL, obviously, but it wasn't my game, and I sucked at it. I played it maybe 3-4 times, did not like it. You got little knobs, you're moving them around. I don't know what's going on. I'm just doing this thing,
can I,
you know?
Can I ask
Much
a question?
Much like foreplay. I have no idea what's happening, just moving the knobs.
just knobs.
I don't know.
Did Scorpion and Sub-Zero become the fan favorites because their moves were so easy to do? Because they had the easiest moves to do?
I believe so. So right, there's a real question about this. About so in game design, when the designers are not careful or they are rushed or they're not thinking through, you will often have characters who are overpowered. And Sub-Zero and Scorpion were both clearly overpowered in the first version of Mortal Kombat. And Scorpion in particular was really easy, right? So the other thing game designers talk about is whether a character is easy or deep, right? And the deeper a character is, the character can become very powerful if you know how to use him, right? So a character which is, reliant on long combinations, like long combos, will be a very deep character, and you can inflict a ton of damage if you know how to use him. But the thing is, you have to know how to run like 6 combos together. Whereas with Scorpion or Sub-Zero, you could just mash the buttons.
That's what I was doing, mashing them.
Like, down. Half circle down, back, yeah, half. Yep. 2 punches together. Oh, look at that! I threw a spear at him.
How did I do that? I don't know. Just do go crazy.
Yeah.
JBL,
to be honest, I did not play it much in the arcade. I played it mostly on PlayStation.
JBL, did you want to talk, you said, about the game itself?
You played on PlayStation or Sega?
I'm pretty sure PlayStation. Pretty sure it was PlayStation. Yeah, the game itself is a really important in the history of games. It's part of the reason we have the rating system for games is because, I don't know if you guys remember this, some of you may not, but there's a huge outcry over Mortal Kombat. There was a moral panic over Mortal Kombat.
Because there's blood spill, right?
There's blood everywhere.
We'll get to this. We'll get to this when I rank the fatalities.
It's an important game. Qua game, and we're going to do some rankings. You may be surprised where I rank it in the fighting game rankings because I have a whole big old ranking of fighting
this is
games.
Exciting.
Is Samurai exciting. Showdown number one? Is Neo Geo Samurai Showdown number one?
Did you have Neo Geo?
No, but I did. I did have Samurai Showdown on Super Nintendo. Super Nintendo.
There were always kids there was somebody who had a Neo Geo and somebody who had an Atari Jaguar who would just insist, this is five times better than everything else that's out here. Why won't you recognize its greatness? Yeah. It was the beta of its...
Meanwhile, I think I was probably playing Karateka on the Apple
Tekken.
III.
Playing Tekken on Dreamcast.
We're going to get to Tekken. So anyway, no, I think everything about it is amazing. And the fact that this thing was written in 10 months, like from conception to art renderings to design and coding.
Always kind of looked that way. It always looked shaky and kind of cheap, even as it was kind of fun and cool to do the moves.
But it hit. I mean, people went crazy.
People loved it.
Every once in a while, you get a game that takes like wider American culture by storm, and they're very rare. You know, I would say in that class would be Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, Super Mario Brothers, and Mortal Kombat. I mean, I can't think of too many more.
Halo, maybe. Right?
Halo, yeah, Halo. Halo is a good example of it. But they're really few and far between. And even Halo is more of a hardcore gamer thing, you know, than just everything. And part of it is because we don't have arcades anymore for people to just wander into. Because people just wander into an arcade to plunk 50 cents down to play Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. It was amazing. So what rankings do we have? What are the rankings? I have a ranking of the fighting game franchises.
Oh,
I have a ranking of the fatalities from the first Mortal Kombat game.
Let me just do mine then, because mine is from somebody who didn't play Mortal Kombat, and it's just from the movie, which is five deaths ranked from the movie.
Only five deaths in this crap movie.
I know, it's not really good. In Mortal Kombat. So let me just go through it. Number five, Sonya Blade blows Melina away. So she has suddenly her...
Suddenly she has powers.
Okay,
she just shows up.
Question, if you kill somebody with the mark, you inherit the mark?
Yes.
Yeah.
So just because you have the mark doesn't mean you are obviously immortal. So she
gets her Arcana immediately.
She's in a stressful situation.
And it's stupid movie.
Pink laser beams that went right through.
You see through Melina's the holes in her body.
Yes.
Isn't
okay.
That
awesome? That's right. Okay.
Yeah. That did it better
than she is a vampire in this movie.
Did it better in Quick and the Dead.
That is a fantastic shot in Quick and the Dead.
Okay, so I had to look for these names. I could not keep track of these names. I looked on IMDb, and I'm looking on the left column and the right column, much like a Chinese restaurant, and it was like, Chin Han, Shang Tsung. I'm like, who is who? Which is the actor, and which one is the character's name? Yeah. Very confusing. Sorry. I can say it. My grandfather
was
Chinese.
That was Victorino Mattis from Extraction from the Philippines.
That's right. So number four, Goro gets disemboweled by Cole. Did everybody want to be Goro in Mortal Kombat? Because I couldn't play as Goro until
Mortal Kombat 2.
Goro, not especially.
Too slow.
Yeah.
I have questions in between the rankings. What is Cole's Arcana armor? Is it armor? Golden armor?
Great question, Vic. Why don't you explain that to us?
Actually, his armor looks a lot like Aquaman's armor.
It is. It's this golden suit. Okay. Number three, Rico, I guess his name, gets beheaded by Jax. And now he's the guy with the giant hammer, the sledgehammer fella, I think. And I think I would have used that to behead him, to crush his head. But instead, he just uses his now humongous arms now. Yes, that's right. That's what he does to it. Wow.
Jax was a sucker character. Jax was underpowered in Tekken. You never wanted to play as Jax.
Mortal Kombat.
I got that sense. Two is Kano getting skull fucked by the gnome. So, which is something. It reminded me of Die Hard 2, where the Bruce Willis kills the villain by shoving the icicle into his eyeball. And the last one, again, I had to look at this. The succubus, basically, was Nitara. And she goes headfirst into the hat buzzsaw
You missed one.
I missed
one. Missed one.
Yeah,
what did I forget?
You missed Kano.
You missed Kano. Kano
the
ripping
out
Lizard's
heart.
Oh
yeah, that's right. I forgot.
That's
about
the
that.
Best. That's the best kill in the whole movie.
Yeah. Hey, could you Can you be the lizard in the game?
Yes.
He was a hidden character in the first game,
second
game.
Let me throw this at you. So Kano, who in this is played by
Australian actor,
is he Australian? Josh Lawson is his name. I don't know where he's from. He is a better version of what Ryan Reynolds would have done had he been given this part. He's great in this movie.
You couldn't have Ryan.
I'm very glad that you mentioned him because he's hysterical.
Yeah. He's the best thing in the movie by far.
He is the best thing in the movie. The movie misses him once he dies.
His opposite in the outworld is somebody we don't see, but is predator-like, wearing the mask, and we don't.
Cabal.
Cabal.
The scene where Kano gets swept like 5 times in a row is the best scene in the movie because it's just like
that in a game.
That's a thing,
right?
That happens in the game.
That is what Liu Kang would do over and over. Right, Liu Kang with that low leg sweep.
Yeah. It was super fast because he was so quick.
I would say the honorable mention death is when Jax loses his arms. He should have just died, but it was very humiliating that he dies armless.
Just emasculated.
Yeah, it was totally. It was
losing
awful.
His appendages.
It was awful. Red Sonya, Sonya Blade.
Sonya Blade.
Didn't she remind you of Hilary Swank? That's who I thought.
Yeah, she was actually the worst piece of casting in this. I would say you need to... Again, Mrs. Pete Sampras really inhabited that role.
Mrs. Pete Sampras was great in all of the non-fighting scenes, but when she is asked to do anything physical... She looks absurd in that movie.
What did you
think? I rewatched it recently. I rewatched it like a week or two ago, and she looks like, I mean, she looks like a girl doing these things. There's no other way to put it.
I'm
trying
intrigued.
To shoot a shotgun and, you know, whatever.
Go ahead. Your guy's turns.
So let me do mine because this will be a little more nerd-tastic. Number six, I have 6 video game franchises. And number 6 on this list is Dead or Alive. Do you guys remember Dead or Alive?
Is that the volleyball one?
So Dead or Alive began as just a normal 3D fighting game knockoff, very Japanese. And then the designers went full Vic and started spending basically all of their time trying to program realistic physics for the female character's breasts. And the result of this, I would like to show you, reached its apogee in Dead or Alive Extreme 3, which was a spin-off of the main Dead or Alive series, which took all of the female fighters from the series, put them on a beach resort, in bikinis, you could choose different things to play. One of the things you could play was the hopping game. What is the hopping game? You choose your figure and she jumps.
You know, I think I
get
might
to
have,
watch her jump.
I've gotten some sort of version of this game from a listener who they sent it to me when I had it for the Xbox.
Another game at the resort is the two girls stand on a floaty device back to back and mash their butts into each other until one can knock another one off.
These are great games.
Another
competition
volleyball. So listen, this is going to require some editing, Sonny, and I'm sorry, but you guys have to see this. So give me a moment, and I'm going to show you just a clip from this amazing game. Look at this is the butt fighting.
I love it because they all have the Japanese voice.
In one of the Dead or Alive extreme franchises, there is, you know, with these things you can always get power buffs, right? And buffs. There is a buff, which is a kind of lotion which makes the skin soft. It's a skin softening lotion, but the result of which is just to add more jiggle. And so this is, you can't believe that this is real, but I promise you.
This is riveting, riveting, audio podcast material.
The listeners, uh-oh.
Hold on. You're gonna have to put the links in the Patreon, Sonny.
Mm-hmm.
This is a video game. This is a fighting game.
That's great. Okay, yes, I see that one. Yeah. Now, so there's no actual fighting is what you're saying. This is just them having a vacation.
Not in this, but in that is in Dead or Alive Extreme. But in the Dead or Alive series, there was a great deal of fighting. It's just almost entirely between girls in bikinis who are jiggling.
I'd say that's genius.
I thought you would say that. Number five, I put the Street Fighter series, which is by Capcom, which is the granddaddy of them all, but which I never had much affinity for. It's flat 2D scrolling.
I loved it. It was just my kind of game.
I was very happy that they partnered with Marvel, and so you got both an X-Men version of Street Fighter called Children of the Atom, as well as then the Capcom versus Marvel, and that was kind of fun, but it didn't do it for me. Number four.
I played that in the summer of 92.
Yeah, which one? Marvel versus...
Street Fighter. No, just Street Fighter. Into that.
Who was your character?
Oh, I might
Blanca.
Have... No, is that the Brazilian monster?
Blanca was the character to play if you knew nothing about.
Yeah,
did you play Chun Li?
No, I always played one of the dudes who was like he looked
either
like
Ken
he was
or
like
Ryu.
Yeah,
Ryu.
That's right. That's exactly who. Okay.
Yeah. Number four for me is the Mortal Kombat series, which, to be honest, my favorite entry of which is the Mortal Kombat versus DC. Which was a direct to console port, and it had a whole bunch of DC heroes and villains, and you could fight them against each other or against the Mortal Kombat characters. It was great, a lot of fun. Number three, Sega's Virtua Fighter series. Do either of you remember this?
Sure,
I didn't have a Sega.
It was so good. Virtua Fighter 3, I believe, had a character who is a drunken master. And so he would, did the full drunken Shaolin.
Drunken gun.
It was really great. There was no story behind it, right? It was just, here's a cool collection of really great motion capture.
If you watched Kung Fu on Saturday, whatever, you knew the character.
Oh, yeah. Tekken, number two. My favorite of all the Tekkens was Tekken 2. It was a Namco port. Really great. And number one all time, Soul Calibur. Which is the sword fighting version of Tekken. So half martial arts, half swords. You get to both do martial arts stuff, but also parry. And it was just great. Great. I can't tell you how many hundreds of hours I spent playing Soul Calibur.
Samurai Showdown better than all these.
So, but I do have one thing I wanted to mention as the worst fighting game ever. It was for PlayStation. It was called Bushido Blade. Do either of you remember this?
Yeah.
Bushido Blade sold itself as the most realistic sword fighting game ever. And it was. It was realistic in the sense that if you basically touch the other person, they die.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And, one hit, no matter where it is, kills the other person.
It was lethal.
And it... The game was so no fun that it even had a whole bunch of moves that were doable. You could do them if you wanted to. You could throw sand in the person's eyes. But because they were against the honor code, if you used them, then you couldn't advance past a certain level. This is like a video game, the video game version of the flight simulators that were too realistic. Where you're like, hey, it's a flight simulator. It's just like flying a 737 from New York to Australia. And then you realize, wait a minute, who the fuck wants to fly a 737? Like, it's just, what that means is you sit staring at your computer for 20 hours.
Right, that's right.
That's what hyper-realistic, hyper-realistic flight simulators do.
Some dudes do.
A hyper-realistic sword fighting simulator? Not fun. Not fun at all.
There was a movie in the 80s called Bushido Blade, and I believe that did
Edward
very
James
well.
Almost?
It did well on all the quadrants, too. because it was in the 80s.
All right, so that is my ranking.
Thank you, JVL. That was great.
Did either of you ever play Soul Calibur?
No. I didn't play any of these games except for Street Fighter.
I had one of the Soul Calibur games for either PS3 or PS4 because it was like $10 one Black Friday or something. I was like, oh, yeah, I'll get this. And it was fine. I just, like, I couldn't get into it. It was too hard. Like, all the new fighting games are, there's too much to do.
There's a lot going on.
There's too much to do. There are too many, like, characters and skins and moves. And I just want to fight in a linear fashion and progress in this tournament and then fight a boss who you can't get otherwise. That's all I want to do in these games.
All right. Well, so Sonny, would you like to?
Yeah. What is?
Yeah, I'll go quick because we're running kind of long here. All right. I'm ranking the original Mortal Kombat fatalities. 7 and last is Liu Kang's uppercut. Terrible, boring move. 6 is Raiden's electrocution. Again, kind of boring, terrible, not that interesting. 5 was Johnny Cage's uppercut, which was slightly more interesting than Liu Kang's uppercut. Not that great. Here's where it starts to get more fun. Sonya Blade's Kiss of Death. That was always a nice one to see broken out. Scorpion's fire breath was like the actual, like, one of the like three good ones, because he pulls off his face and there's a skull underneath and he breathes fire.
It's a
and
character
burns the
reveal
guy.
Right, until you do that first. You think he's a man, you don't realize he's a demon
and he's gonna get you. The number 2 is the Sub-Zero spine rip. You like rip a guy's head off and then there's the spine. Wow. Just wiggling underneath. And then number 1 was Kano, who you could reach into somebody's chest and pull out their heart.
Oh, so he
and
did
eat it,
it
I think. I feel like there was some eating of the heart. Yeah. But that was what I think got them into the most trouble with Congress.
Was eating the heart.
Mm,
yeah.
Did you ever do Babalities?
Well, that wasn't until the second and third ones. They added different things like friendships and the babalities, the animalities, all of that stuff.
Which
they were just middle fingers to
the politicians, right?
Yeah, the friendships certainly were. Like one of them was like the guy like holds up a stop sign and like helps all the characters across the street. You know, and that was one of the friendships. It was kind of, I mean, they were funny, but they were also clearly like an F you to the Senate.
By the way, Raiden's character with the lightning bolts and stuff, that's basically, if you remember Big Trouble in Little China, there was a guy who looked exactly like him with the same hat.
That is 100% true.
The same hat.
100% true. I do miss Christopher Lambert as a Scottish Chinese rice paddy god.
Yeah.
That was
kind of laughing at awkward times.
An inspired bit of gassing. All right, well, so good. So we all agree it was the greatest movie ever. Okay.
Thank you, JVL. Spirit of the week. Sonny, you're drinking a martini. What's going on here?
I made a Roku gin martini.
Hey.
You inspired me to go out and buy a bottle of Roku gin with your thoughtful advertorial.
That's right. It is an advertorial.
I tried to do the drizzly thing, but apparently that's only like for your first drizzly order of any type. I thought it was like the first time you order Roku gin via drizzly.
I was going to say clarification, your first purchase, not your first purchase of Roku, but your first purchase at drizzly.
Period.
So you are a drizzly regular.
I wouldn't say I'm a regular, but I've used it three or four times during the pandemic.
Great. What did you do with the twist or olives or what?
Blue cheese olives.
How was it?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Gin martini.
Good gin. You put a little orange bitter in there too?
Of course.
Very good. Very good. Okay. I also wanted to, speaking of Spirit of the Week, I wanted to give a special thanks to listener and friend Robert Little, who, when he heard us talking about barrel aging cocktails, sent me several small bottles like the size of bitters that he had put together himself as a sample. They arrived today. Two of the four were crushed, courtesy of the U.S. Postal Service.
Oh.
So, crushed, like wet and broken glass. Sadly, it is not your fault. However, the rusty nail and the old fashioned were still intact. They're upstairs. I haven't gotten to it yet, but I look forward to it, especially the rusty nail, which I think I've only had once ever, and that's the Drambuie and Scotch. That's very exciting. So thank you so much for that. Okay. In corrections, friend and listener Ian Brody says, you guys, on the last episode, you said John Smiley, but it's George Smiley. You must have just misspoke. I'm sure you all know that. And anything else?
Nope.
Okay, that's all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at SundayBunch at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We are there. Tell your friends. Until next time. You got anything?
I have something, but it's not really an outtake. It's more of Sonny and I should do a whole show just us to talk about it because, Vic, you won't have any interest in it.
Yes, which is?
Is HBO Max now the best streaming service?
Oh, yeah.
I've been saying this since the beginning.
I know you have. I'm telling you.
Everyone comes around to Bunch's thought eventually.
Well, I think it's actually the second best to
Disney. They're popping in movies a lot now that I remember when I first looked at HBO Max. And I was like, oh, this is it? Because you reach the end when you're scrolling. And all of a sudden, there's like, I'll think of a movie. Oh, I'd like to watch this with my son, whatever. Where is it streaming? And it'll pop up and it'll say it's streaming on HBO Max.
I would say Disney Plus is the best for kids.
I rarely go to Disney Plus.
But HBO Max is, when I am just like trying to figure out what I want to watch some night and I don't have like an actual idea of like, I want to watch this specific thing, I turn on HBO Max and just start scrolling around
and
within
surprised.
5 minutes I find something.
But this is the thing. So Netflix has nothing on that anybody actually wants to watch.
Yeah.
It has a million things and nothing that's any good. And HBO Max and Disney have very much smaller libraries, but full of mostly things that people would like to see.
Right. Yeah. I was thinking about it because one of them had like Dunkirk and things like that. And I think Tenet's coming up and things of nature. And I thought,
yeah. So you and I could do a whole like bonus show on that if you want to. But that's all I had. Did you guys have anything?
No.
Things going on?
I'm waiting for Brazzers Max.
I'm sure it's fine.